is a district court judge from Lancaster County. With that, Mr. Lutz Prefort, good morning to you.
Good morning.
And is it Ms.
Khalil.
I hope I got that right.
You did.
Are you going to be arguing today?
Yes, sir.
Very good. And we have Ms. Fisher here also. Do any counsel have any questions before we begin?
There you are.
With that, then, Mr. Lutz Prefort, you may approach and you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Zachary Lutz Prefort on behalf of Nicholas and Sarah Mahovitz and Active Spine Physical Therapy, LLC. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes of time for rebuttal. Your Honors, this case fundamentally comes down to a key issue of whether or not the appellants were entitled to a jury trial rather than a bench trial. Primarily, this case develops from a contract between originally a company known as Demu Properties, LLC, which then this contract was assigned the lease between the landlord and tenant to 132 Ventures, LLC. As a result, and the fact that we're dealing with contract, Nebraska Revised Statute 25-1126 provides that the parties are entitled to a right to jury trial, absent three key exceptions.
This is a forceful injury and detainer action, is that correct?
Yes, it is a forceful injury and detainer action initially. However, it also had the damages component for breach of contract involved.
So under our forceful injury and detainer, what do the statutes say about jury trials?
The forcible entry and detainer statutes specifically contemplate jury trials. One of the statutory provisions states that the judge or the jury, as may be applicable, may decide damages.
And so, jury is demanded? Is there language about that?
I'm not certain off the top of my head. I don't think it specifically states the jury has to be demanded. Regardless, particularly I think it once the point where at the contractual issue and the damage issue in general, the issue is still dictated by the three exceptions in 1126. And the three exceptions, the first two, I think the parties agree, are not applicable. The first one is effectively the default judgment. One side shows up and the other doesn't. That obviously didn't happen here. Both parties were present. The second is where there is something filed in writing with the court or with the clerk of the court signed either by the party or the attorney stating that they waive the right to jury trial. Again,
so you're assuming that there's a constitutional right to a jury trial?
That would be correct, yes.
And when the statute says that a jury trial or the case should be tried to the court unless the parties demand a jury trial, what if it says that, what effect would that have? Does that mean there's not a constitutional right to a jury trial? Does that mean there's constitutional right to part of the case, the case is bifurcated? How does that play in?
I think it would be the latter. I think there's a constitutional right to the bifurcation issue. So essentially that's what happens here. The forceful entry and detainer portion, liability, should they be ousted from the property, I think there is you have to make the affirmative action of demanding the jury trial. The secondary portion of it, I don't think you have to. I think 25-1126 states that you have that right absent waiving it. And I think that's particularly important when you look at the Mahovitz's perspective of it. Because the Mahovitz's perspective of this has nothing to do with a forceful entry and detainer. Theirs is strictly breach of contract on whether or not they have a personal guarantee, and they've breached the personal guarantee by not paying the debt.
So if they were sued for breach of contract or a breach of a personal guarantee, by constitutional right, they would be entitled to a jury trial?
Correct, because it's a contract. And 25-1126 specifies that in an instance involving a contract, the parties have a right to jury trial absent the three exceptions. So on their claim in particular, it is a clear guarantee issue. They clearly have a right to jury trial absent the waiver.
Now, the forcible entry detainer portion, the possession portion, was tried to the court. Is that correct?
That is correct. On two separate instances, it was tried to the court, once in front of Judge Schatz and then subsequently in front of Judge Burns.
And there's no ruling from Judge Schatz on the issue of possession. The matter was just transferred to Judge Burns.
Correct. That's correct.
So, in fact, we have one trial, maybe two parts of that trial, on the issue of possession.
I think it's probably accurate to say that you have one trial with two parts. And the only reason I specify that is because the transcript from the original portion of that trial was offered into evidence in the subsequent portion. Regardless, I think in either instance on that first component, the forcible entry and detainer component, there was no demand for a jury trial. There was no request for it at that point in time. But I also don't think it has any bearing when you shift to, now we're looking at the damage component of it.
So after the issue of possession is made, that decision is made by the court, is there a demand for jury?
In this instance, there was no demand for jury, but I also believe this court's ruling and statutes don't require the demand. The ability for it in district court exists up until you waive it. And by objecting to it both in writing and orally prior to the trial starting, and by objecting to witnesses and exhibits on the basis of the lack of jury trial, that exception is preserved. Neither the Mohavitzes nor Act of Spine affirmatively said on the record in open court that they were accepting a non-jury trial. They attempted to stop that from happening on at least three separate instances.
There's some indication in the briefing that there was a hearing on the matter to set the matter for trial, and that all parties may have been present, and there may be some waiver on the record of a right to a jury trial by the defendants in this case, your clients. Is that information in our record?
There is no information in this court's record, nor was there ever a record made of a waiver by any of the appellants. The court's order from September 29th indicates that by agreement of the parties, there was a waiver of the jury. There was an agreement to a bench trial. That was not done on the record, and that's why no record of it exists, and that's why it's not applicable under the waiver statute, because the waiver statute is explicit that it has to be in open court and on the record. And the fact that that second prong was not satisfied means that it cannot meet that requirement.
And your position is, despite the absence of a demand for jury trial in the complaint or in the answer, that you still get to the whether a jury trial was waived because, finish my sentence.
Because by law, we still have the right to jury trial in district court proceedings up until waiver occurs. And that's, I believe this court discusses that in Jacobson v. Shrestha.
Was that a forcible entry and detainer case?
No, it was not. But again, aside from the fact that part of this case is a forcible entry and detainer, particularly when you apply it to the Mohavitzes, there's no forcible entry and detainer component to them. The only issue is to the Mohavitzes is a breach of contract. And that breach of contract, while tied to a lease, for their purposes, has nothing to do with the forcible entry and detainer component. Theoretically, Act of Spine could have continued to occupy the property, and maybe for whatever reason, there's another breach causing damages to occur. No forcible entry and detainer occurs, but there still does raise the question of the personal guarantee being triggered. If that was the instance, we wouldn't be having this conversation of, is there a demand, is the forcible entry and detainer in some way special in this issue? All we'd be focusing in on is the damages. And for purposes of the Mohavitzes especially, that's exactly what it is. It's only focused in on the issue of the damages. And that personal guarantee, while related to a lease, doesn't relate to the forcible entry and detainer component of it.
Thank you.
Forcible entry and detainer is termed a summary proceeding or a statutory proceeding for expediting of getting the property to whoever's rightfully entitled to it. Does that have any impact on whether there's a constitutional right to a jury? Or what have we said in those situations?
I think the parties have a right to demand a jury in a forcible entry and detainer proceeding. Obviously, the statutes in this court have contemplated if there is delay, what the tenant has to do in that instance in terms of providing assurances and bonding. But as far as the impact of it on the subsequent portion of the bifurcation issue, I don't think that it has any impact on it. I think obviously it creates the unique situation that is contemplated, which is courts cannot, if you take the summary procedures that the statutes allow, that you are going to have a hearing within 14 days of summons issuing, courts cannot rule on the damages issue at that point in time because there's no answer even due at that point in time. I think it does speak to why waiving jury trial at one phase shouldn't impact the other phase, because if you were to look at and say the waiver were to occur at a set period of time, there's virtually no instance where that set period of time should be at day 14 when answers aren't even due yet. And in fact, where you might have situations where some of the defendants aren't even served yet because it's not relevant to serve them, such as the Mohavitzes in the personal guarantee situation, service on them within that 14 days is wholly irrelevant. If they show up or don't show up with a forcible entry and detainer, it doesn't have any impact on their rights. With that, Your Honors, I'd like to reserve the balance of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Khalil, good morning to you. You may approach.
Good Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Ruby Khalil. I'm here on behalf of the appellee and cross-appellant 132 Ventures, LLC. Contrary and with all due respect to my opponent, this is not a case about the constitutional right to a jury trial. This is purely procedural. If you look at the statutes that are involved here, forcible entry and detainer proceeding is statutorily created. Therefore, the right to jury trial is governed by the plain language of 2521.219. The appellants did not follow that procedure, and therefore they do not get a jury trial, period. The appellant's position is untenable because the determination of damages is part of the statutorily created proceeding under the forcible entry detainer statutes. All aspects of forcible entry and detainer, including demanding a jury trial, are governed by the 2521.219, which states in pertinent part, the court or the jury, as the situation warrants, shall inquire into matters between the two litigants, such as the amount of rent owing to the plaintiff and the amount of damages caused by the defendant. In other words, what we have is one proceeding in two stages, the first stage being the forcible entry and detainer, and the second stage being the determination of damages. The statute gives us that right and guides us.
Is that to conflict with the Constitution?
No, Your Honor, because the forcible entry and detainer is a complete creature of the legislature, as discussed in the Cummins versus the Cummins case, Cummins what? Management versus Gilroy.
An action for damages is not...
No, Your Honor, but the forcible entry and detainer statute does allow for something beyond just the forcible entry and detainer. It says...
But you don't have to join your contract claims in the forcible entry and detainer action.
I would argue that you do, Your Honor, otherwise claim preclusion would apply.
Well, how do you respond then to what section 25-21,232 says, the judgments shall not, under these forcible entry and detainer statutes, shall not be a bar to any future action brought by any either party?
Well,
that seems to me to say if you join the contract action, you're subject to all of the requirements that contract actions bring under our Constitution and common law.
But, Your Honor, that would apply in the sense that there were additional issues between the parties that go beyond damages. In this case, we're talking about a statute that very clearly says that you can go beyond just the scope of the forcible entry and detainer and you can look to damages. So we're looking at one proceeding, two phases.
But you don't have to join your damage claim,
no.
Do you?
No, you do not, but you do have to demand the jury.
For a damage claim that is joined,
yes.
Is your argument.
Yes, that
but
is
if,
correct.
But if we disagree with that, if we, in essence, agree that when a plaintiff voluntarily joins a damage claim, the defendant does have the opportunity on the damage claim to a trial by jury unless waived, that would dispose adversely your argument, correct?
It would, Your Honor, however...
You disagree with the argument, of
course. I disagree with the argument, yes. However, I would also point out to the court that that would be two causes of action, not one cause of action where you're asking for both the forcible entry and detainer and the damages under one pleading.
So, by the way, you pleaded would take away a constitutional right to a jury trial of the defendants because you joined them? Do you have the authority under the statute to do that?
Yes. Under the statute, the statute says that you may join other matters such as the amount of rent owing and the damages. And the statute gives us that ability to have both issues under one proceeding in two stages.
You think the legislature has the power to deprive a party of a common law claim, to deprive the party of the right to trial by jury?
Well, the legislature does have that power, Your Honor, and they did exercise that power in 25-21-219.
What's the source of your argument that they do have that power?
Well, Your Honor, I'd have to research that further into legislative power. But what I can tell you is that the plain black letter wording of the statute says that the court shall inquire into matters. It says shall, not may. It says shall inquire into matters between the two litigants.
Don't you agree that the Constitution of the State of Nebraska is the supreme law of the State of Nebraska?
It is, Your Honor.
And however, if there's a conflict with statute, it prevails over the statute?
I would say that that would be true if this was not a complete creation of a statute, a statutory proceeding.
So the parties to the personal guarantee, I'm going to mispronounce their name, so I won't use it, they were not in possession of the property. Active Spine was, is that correct?
Yes, Active Spine was in possession of the property.
So the personal guarantee is a law action, is that correct?
It would be a law action, however.
So those parties would be entitled to a jury trial if they were sued for breaching a personal guarantee.
If they were sued in specifically for breaching a personal guarantee, yes.
Outside of the forcible entry and detainer?
Correct, outside the forcible entry and detainer structure.
So because they were brought in as a defendant in this case, that initially started out as a forcible entry and detainer, then it's your argument that they are not entitled to constitutionally not entitled to a jury trial.
Yes, and I would also base that upon the fact that, as my opponent mentioned, Jacobson, under Jacobson, there are three instances under which a jury trial can be waived.
So let's talk about those three instances.
Yes.
We agree that one and two probably don't apply in this situation.
Number three does apply, Your Honor, because...
But one and two, we can agree that they don't apply.
Yes, we can.
So number three is you have to waive it on the record in open court.
Well, number three is...
Is that what the statute says?
By oral consent in open court entered upon the journal. However, Jacobson goes on to state that cases in which the parties tried issues of fact to the court without objection should be construed as to falling into the oral consent
category.
So
how did the parties to the personal guarantee try issues of fact?
They actually tried these issues of fact to the court. Mr. Mahovich testified. Mrs. Mahovich testified. Their testimony involved...
Who were they called by?
They were called, I believe, by Mr. Zach Lutz-Prefert. I was not part of that proceeding, Your Honor. They actually testified...
Isn't it true that they offered no evidence?
No, they offered evidence, Your Honor. In fact, Judge Burns, in his order that he issued, states that he made finding of facts related to testimony presented by the Mahoviches. Judge Burns' order of January 4th, in fact, references Mr. Mahovich's testimony over 10 times within it. So clearly the issues involved in the forcible entry and detainer, including the breach of the lease and the breach of the guarantee, were in fact litigated. Judge Burns' order addresses the validity of the contract. Judge Burns' order addresses the personal guarantee.
I confess I haven't looked at the Bill of Exceptions, but does the Bill of Exceptions contain what you're describing?
Yes, Your Honor, it does.
All right.
Did Judge Burns find that there was a waiver here?
I'm sorry, a waiver of jury trial?
Yes.
No, in the first forcible entry and detainer action, he simply heard the evidence and he ordered the forcible entry and detainer. If they were allowed to switch horses in the middle of the race, if this court believes that this was not one proceeding with two stages, and the appellants were allowed to say, I don't like what the judge said. I don't like the fact that he kicked me out. Now I want a different trier of fact. That would lead us to a completely inconsistent result.
So after the issue of possession was decided by Judge Burns, then there was allegedly a hearing held, all parties present, to set the matter for trial, and Judge Burns indicates that there was some waiver at that hearing.
Yes, Your Honor.
Is that hearing on our on the record, and is it in our appellate record?
That hearing was not on the record. That was an informal hearing. In fact, the reason it was not on the record was because the Mahovich's counsel got stuck in traffic. We all gathered around the speakerphone while Judge Burns selected the date. All counsel agreed to the date for a bench trial.
But none of that's in our record.
But none of that is in the record. If I may use the remainder of my time to just address a couple of things in my cross appeal. First and foremost, this court's aware of the facts of this case. The Mahoviches, Nick Mahovich specifically, altered the lease for Active Spine Physical Therapy, and he did so illegally in violation of the operating agreement between these parties. It's our position here that should Mr. Mahovich's unauthorized actions be allowed to stand, the result becomes absurd. We'd be setting the precedent that people without appropriate authority can find property for decades and into perpetuity without recourse.
The court seemed to determine that 132 Ventures could not object to the validity of that amendment because they were not a party to that amendment.
I would disagree with that, Your Honor, because under the Spanish Oaks case, the covenant of good faith and fair dealing is inherent in every contract. And in this case, by illegally altering his own lease agreement with the original landlord, which then passed to 132 Ventures, we're basically saying he breached that covenant of good faith and fair dealing, and therefore we do have standing to assert the rights that are necessary in this case.
To invalidate the amendment.
Correct. Thank you for helping me with that.
Very good. Thank you.
If there are no further questions, may I be excused?
You may.
Thank you.
Do we have time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. 1 minute, 14 seconds.
1 minute and 14 seconds. Mr. Lutz-Briefer.
Thank you, Your Honors. I'd like to really quickly clarify a factual issue. When Ms. Khalil was discussing the testimony of Nicholas and Sarah Mahovitz, she was referring to the previous action concerning the forcible entry and detainer component when they were represented by Andrew Collins. That was only active spying testifying. As the record reflects, the Mahovitzes hadn't entered an appearance in the case at that point in time, nor had they answered. In fact, they wouldn't answer for about 3 weeks after the initial August hearing. Now, as a result, they were not at all dealt with in the forcible entry and detainer in their individual capacities. To the extent they were testifying, it was exclusively on behalf of active spying. This court touched on the issue already. The legislature can't abrogate the common law right to a jury trial. The legislature can limit it, and this court noted in Jacobson that the legislature can and did validly limit it by putting in place the three exceptions. It can't outright eliminate the ability to do so.
And what about our common law? What about, like, the equitable cleanup doctrine? What role does that have in a case like this, if any?
I don't think it has any role in a case like this because I think it's so clear-cut that there is a contract, there is a right to a jury trial by statute, and especially as to the Mahovitzes, the forcible entry and detainer statutes have no bearing on them.
On that issue, I want to make sure I understand your request. Are you requesting a remand for a jury trial on both issues or just on the second trial?
Just on the second trial. I think that our time to raise the issue of the forcible entry and detainer by statute would have lapsed 30 days after the entry of that order. So the January 2021 order, in February of 2021, that issue was foreclosed. The only relief being requested is a reversal and remand to proceed with a jury trial on the issue of damages for active spying and Nicholas and Sarah Mahovitz individually on their personal guarantees. And we would request that this court issue exactly that, a reversal and remand to proceed with a jury trial. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you very much. Counsel, that concludes arguments in 132 Ventures, LLC versus Active Spine Physical Therapy, LLC. So you are excused.
Thank you.
And the court will proceed to the case of Buttercase versus Davis.